We know our story for this morning fairly well, or at least how it ends up. This is the story of Elijah being found on the mountain and listening for the voice of God. And we know the punchline of the story. That this powerful prophet sits and listens to the fire and to the wind, and the voice of God was not within them, but only the still, small voice comes after. But what we often leave out of that story and distance ourselves from is the circumstances under which this comes to be. And they are fairly challenging circumstances. Just before, you have this showdown between Elijah and the prophets of Baal, where they are trying to make it rain by making a fire burn. And it ends with, of course, Yahweh bringing fire, and Elijah exacting revenge. And then we get the story of Elijah on the run. So listen to this in that context. This is 1 Kings chapter 19, verses 1 through 13. Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done and how he had killed all the prophets with the sword. Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah saying, "Tell me the gods do to me, and more also, if I do not make your life, let the life of one of these by this time tomorrow." Then he was afraid. He got up and fled for his life and came to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and left his servant there. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat under a solitary broom tree. He asked that he might die. "It's enough now, O Lord. Take away my life, for I know better than my ancestors." "Get up and eat." He looked, and there at his head was a cake baked on hot stones and a jar of water. He ate and drank and lay down again. The angel of the Lord came a second time, touched him, and said, "Get up and eat, otherwise the journey will be too much for you." He got up, ate, and drank. Then he went on the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights to Horeb, the Mount of God. At that place, he came to a cave and spent the night there. Then the word of Yahweh came to him, saying, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" He answered, "I have been very zealous for Yahweh, the God of hosts, for the Israelites have forsaken me. Threw down your altars, killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and they are seeking my life to take it away." God said, "Go and stand on the mountain before Yahweh, for I am about to pass by." Now there was a great wind, so strong that it was splitting the mountains and breaking the rocks in pieces before Yahweh. But Yahweh was not in the wind. After the wind, an earthquake, but Yahweh was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but Yahweh was not in the fire. And after the fire, a sound of sheer silence. When Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his mantle and went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. What are you doing here, Elijah? More than a month ago, we were preparing for some time in the city. I don't know about you, but this image is not one that's terribly restful or whatnot, because it takes a certain preparation to go to the city. There are trips and trips to urban dwelling and need to be remembered as we take up to the challenge of living on the streets. This was brought to mind because as we were preparing for Kansas City, I didn't make a big deal of this, but there was a letter that came, as it always comes, in preparation for convention. And it's a letter that had various do's and don'ts of going to a convention in the city. Like reminding that service workers do work for tips, and it is appropriate to work into that system. And that there are places out there that need attention. And that it might not be the best idea to wear your name tag from the convention, which you need to get into the convention hall on the street, so as to advertise yourself as somebody from the convention. Although, I'm not sure about anyone else who is there. One of the things I enjoy about convention is, even without the name tags, you can kind of spot the menus anywhere. It's always an odd note to me. And as someone who has spent a fair deal of time in city environments, it's good advice. There is a way of being in the city that you just need to take on. Right? You don't always want to make eye contact on public transit. You don't always want to walk on certain streets at certain times. And over time, you build up a bit of a bubble to protect yourself and to say, okay, this is what is here. And this is how I will hear. And this is how I will be. Because this is what the environment requires of me. We need this awareness to activate our bubbles. But it's always a little bit of a disconnect to me to get this reminder when we're also gathering as the body and in the name of Christ. We're doing something that intrinsically asks us to break our bubbles, while we're also being reminded that the bubbles are some of the problems that we have to face. And yet to hold that together at the same time. This text of Elijah on the mountain is a favorite. We answered the sight of the still small voice, speaking in the silence when we wish to evoke a sense of the Spirit. Especially for we are not particularly gifted to the announcement of what God said to me today, waiting on the active voice of the Spirit is something that takes a while and is often associated more with the silence, with the places that we know and where we can rest, than necessarily anything else. There are churches and church traditions where the voice of the Spirit is an active part of the worship service, and that you haven't really worshiped until The Spirit has come and has been demonstrated in our midst. And I'd hasten to say, just because that's not necessarily an identifiable part of our service doesn't mean that a service is absent of the Spirit and the workings thereof. But it is a thing, and not particularly our thing. We're given much more to the silence and what's there. We read the Elijah listening to God part and mostly skip the setup. Elijah on the run from the rulers of the age and being led up to the mountain. This prophet who just days before had taken on the entirety of prophets of Baal with mockery and derision and put them to the sword, leaving none alive, is now driven into the wilderness, fearing before Yahweh for his very life as revenge is sought. He's ready to die, and the situation appears hopeless. Yet still he is led to the very mountain of God to hear from God. And there he endures dreadful forces, waiting for the silence to come. To him, in that silence outside the conflict and in this exchange, he's given what he needs to hear from God. After all the noise, after all the rest, after all that's there. And so we take a very natural response. And we say, well, God is in the silence. Seek the silence and you will find God. Seek the still small voice and it will be there. And that's not a bad moral to draw from this story. We do need to silence our souls. And the flip side of the Elijah story is not just was God in the wind and the earthquake and the fire, but how did Elijah know that God was not in the wind and earthquake and fire, except that he listened to them? And he heard them, and he discerned them. But it's there. The trick with God is in the silence all the time is the unfortunate corollary. Namely, that God must only speak in silence. We can be led to think that since there's so much of our experience both then and now, that we need to get the noisier moments of life to consider the voice of the Lord. So at those moments where we take to the city streets, we have our protective bubble of that we erect in our spiritual lives as well. Those places where we simply say, well, God doesn't speak here because it's too noisy. And it's noisy to me, therefore, God must not speak, therefore, I don't need to listen. We have barriers and layers of soul protection, filtering out that which we don't wish to encounter, all that we don't want to challenge us, all where we're pretty sure that God can't be speaking. Yet, sometimes, in order to experience the extraordinary, the bubble needs to break a little bit on the way. And sometimes it needs to pop. Sometimes you have to risk something in order to learn and encounter something of what you're expecting. That happened for us in Kansas City. It was an ordinary enough event. Cities are what they are, and I'm guessing it didn't take a whole lot of time for people to figure out that there's a bunch of really nice people meeting downtown at the convention center. and they're from a church. And when, on one of the nights where we were left to our own devices to get dinner, we as a family were walking the streets trying to get to a restaurant, and of course we were approached by a man with some fairly substantial disfigurements asking for money. And I will be the first to say I have no more expertise than anyone else of who to give to what to when. But the interesting part of this interaction was the conversation that followed. As Luke and Anna were asking questions about the man, about why was he there, about how could we help. And we were trying to bridge the gap between their honest compassion and our modulated reality of, well, it's hard. Well, it's there. And well, we just don't know. Being taken out of our car, that is usually the bubble that protects us most from the ask. We had to deal with what was in front of us. Sometimes our bubbles need to break. And I think sometimes that's true with our spiritual bubbles as well. There are ideas and concepts that we each encounter in different ways and with different results. Ways that make our walls simply go up. Perhaps it's that scripture that you just don't care for, or has been hurtful for you, and you do deflect engaging it to see what it might have to say. Perhaps it's a quality or style of music that's not to your liking, and you made the decision that, well, worship is simply not possible within it. Maybe it is that in those four, in the world in which we move, that is simply too complicated and messy for us to deal with, or even to consider that God might be within, let alone to have anything to say. Perhaps it's the simple protection of, well, if we haven't done it before, we shouldn't need to do it now. Whatever the trigger is, we have a similar response to that of the street. Our walls go up, and we just listen, and we say, well, those are the winds and the earthquakes. We'll wait for the still, small voice. I'll stay in my cave. We'd much rather protect our spiritual selves until the challenge has gone by than risk hearing something that we don't wish to hear. Yet sometimes the voice of God can be challenging. Because it says things like, my love extends even to those who you despise. Or even here and even now, grace is offered. Or, there's nothing about here in life that involves who deserves what. It's simply the fact that I get to be with my people no matter where they need me and no matter where I need to be found. To be sure, we are people of selective hearing. We know this and experience this all the time in our lives. And it can be amazing the lengths that we go to adjust ourselves to hear what we expect and in the way that we want to hear it. We do this with our family and with our spouses, and we do this with God. Listening for the voice of God, if we do it, is something that we want to keep safe and we listen selectively. We'd much rather stay safe when it's time to hear what God might have to say. Yet, that isn't the way of discipleship. It's worth noting here that Elijah's work to encounter God did not permit him to stay safe inside the cave, or stay safe inside his own misery, or to stay safe inside whatever he else wanted to do, or just, let me just go into the wilderness and die. But he had to be nurtured and brought along in order to hear. But he also had to be nurtured and brought along in order to listen. Because, in all truth, we do know what we want to hear from God. We know what we want the call of God to be in our lives, in our world, in our congregation. We want to hear, everything's all right, everything is good, there's no need to change, there's no need to move, there's no need to do anything, for I got you. And while it is certainly possible that that is what God has to say, it's also equally possible that it might be something else entirely. As much as we would prefer to remain safe in our relative caves and live the threat of the cacophony of life outside, it's just not in the cards for us. We might need, even in the chaos, God is still at work and still speaking, even as we struggle to imagine what might be being said. And that's not to say that we walk through the troubles of life as God's narrative on our reality, or to seek to assign meaning to events that hold an external message of God when they simply just happen. But I think we also do well to always check in with ourselves and with each other to say, what is God saying to us now? What is here? Especially as we celebrate upcoming 500 years of a tradition that is based on God speaks to the body. We do well to say, what is God saying? And how is God saying it? And in order to do that, we need to be aware of our barriers and those layers that we need to work through in order to listen to God. Because by being aware of knowing them, we can evaluate those barriers that are constructive and those things that might be standing in our way of hearing something that perhaps we have not heard before. For we all experience change in our lives. Sometimes there are welcome experiences that come with grace and hope and opportunities that allow us into what is new and what is past. And other times there are things and times where we would just as soon not be there and not know God in that time. And we do our best to block and protect ourselves from, sometimes as we must. But we're always invited to say, where is God? How might God be speaking? We're called to discern together, to listen together, to seek God in all things together, good and the bad. Listening for the steadying, hopeful, articulate voice of God at work. as easy as it is when we encounter such occurrences that challenge, push us, that scare us to retreat into our protective shells and to stop listening to the voice inside the storm. We're also invited to know that even in the storm, God is there, God is speaking, and God is providing. Listening, really listening, asks us to risk hearing everything that God is saying and to be changed by what we hear. I want to challenge you to think how we listen for God. Where you work for God's, where you look for God's hands at work, and where you do not look. Maybe the most interesting and easy way to do that is to simply do I wonder sort of thing. Instead of just seeing the bad things of the world, and this is just the one in my mind. Nearly 100 people have died in a wildfire. What do we do? How do we feel? How do we respond? The easiest thing is to simply say, well, that's one of the sins that we grieve and we hold. But maybe the listening response is, I wonder how God is showing up in this place. I wonder what God might be opening us to for what comes next. I wonder what the opportunities might be, even here, even now, to share and to hear and to know God's love. And just because it seems so obvious, and MDS Hawaii, why not? But even beyond that, and even more importantly, even beyond the stuff that is not out there, but in here. And in here. Maybe the first step is simply saying, I wonder where God is taking us next. I wonder how God might be inviting us now. I wonder where God might move next. And maybe that starts as your discipline, your question. But then maybe in time, that becomes our question too. I wonder, what if? What would happen? Where is God? What if we took down some of the bubbles that protect us? What if we might look to hear from God where we don't expect it? From the Old Testament or from Paul that this makes us cringe? Or from those places where we just have not listened in a long time? I wonder what God might be doing in our midst. In our time. And I wonder how we might ever be tuning in to what God has to say and be surprised along the way. May we each be blessed to hear the quiet, calming, loving voice of God wherever you incline your ear and however you hear God chooses to speak. Amen. By way